your daughter, you know, constantly having voice lessons. If you stop voice lessons for a while, your voice tapers off. You've got to keep using it.
This is the South Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your South Storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of South Storage nationwide. With the help of his incredible team at SouthStorageInvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in South Storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the South Storage Podcast. I am your host, Scott Myers, and you are in for a treat today. We have Carol Mixon, who is one of the absolute nicest people, one of the nicest people you will ever talk to in the industry. She has been around in the industry for a very long time. And has seen just about all, because she's been there since the beginning, has done just about every role there is to have in self-storage. And it's an honor to be able to introduce you to her Podcast Nation. If you haven't met her before at one of the trade shows or read any of her writings in the trade show magazines and publications, or had an opportunity to work with her, she, once again, just holds this very esteemed position of being one of the old guard in the industry. And so, Carol, it is so good to have you on the show. Welcome to the Self Storage Podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to start, Carol, by just giving the audience, if there is anybody out there in Storage Nation that hasn't heard of you, give them a little bit of background and history on how you got started in this incredible industry.
Yeah. Well, 1984, so that'll kind of date me for sure. How old I am. Right out of college, I had a degree in secondary education and in vocal music. I sing opera. And so I thought, just coming back to Tucson, my mom and dad had taken a job as self-storage managers, which they used to be, both of them were teachers, and they had an investment they made in a lot of houses. So they had to like get a job. So then their friends said, hey, get storage. So, and Tom Litton's parents had, that was husband one. He had, his parents worked in self-storage. So they knew the people and everything. So they got my mom and dad a job. But the weird thing was they left to go to a doctor's appointment and they said, hey, can you fill in while we're gone? So I did. And I won the award. I guess they called and shopped and I answered. And I won the phone award, and they didn't even know who I was. So Joe Nimchek, and he shows up, and he's like, who are you? Because you won our award. And Mel Holsinger was there, too. So the both of them were like, we want to hire you. And I said, oh, no, I'm singing in La Traviata. And no, you know, I want to be an opera singer. And that was kind of, I've worked so long since I was like 10. to be an opera singer. And then my parents were like, well, you need something like to keep you afloat, right? So do this. So try, and you can still sing at night or whatever. So I did. And I did that for a while. And National was such amazing amount of growth. We went from 16 to 69 properties in 3 years. And that's in the 80s. And we were constantly on the move. And I was the only female executive in the group, so it was a little odd. But the beauty of that was the shops and Max Dollars, they all took care of me. And they was just like, listen, you can do this. Yeah, and they were so supportive. And there was just nothing that they thought I couldn't do and fix. And I got into be able to a lot of construction because sometimes... So, you know, usually you don't. If you're a trainer, you don't ever touch that. But when they'd send me out to new locations, you know, to train the managers, nothing would be ready, really. And then they're like, well, look at the plans and see where we're, you know. And so then I had to learn plans. And so I think, you know, that trial by fire is kind of good, you know, for some people. Some people don't like it, but I did. I just kind of thought, you know what, I'm just going to do the best I can do and be the best person I can be and try to learn everything. And I did. And I think that that it's been really positive for me because I've taken from ground up stores, and not there are a lot of men that have done that, but there aren't as many women. But I will say now to see more women, and this is good. But I don't think I was better for any reason, or you know, I liked it. I just like the storage business. It's under my skin now, and I can't even imagine going out and being a singer now. It would just be this is so fulfilling to me. But I do the exciting part is I still get to stand up in front of people and speak, and you know, I get to do that part of it where you enjoy the audience and I interact with the audience, and I think there's just so much to learn, and sometimes there are things that I'll look at. I'll give you an example. I had this one guy that owned a ski resort in Lake Tahoe area, and he did not like me. He wanted to work with my ex-husband, and he didn't. He's like, you're too pushy. You're too pushy for me. And I said, well, and we were, and what I said, hi, what do you mean pushy? And we were looking at this piece of property in Northern California, and it was too small. I thought based on the information that I got doing the study, that we could probably build like 60,000 or 50 or 60,000. But I thought, why don't we just do a little dirt work, which was a lot of dirt work. Well, you know, as it turned out. So I said, let's do this dirt work. And then, we got it rented up in 6 months. And that's probably the fastest I've had any store rent up. But years later, I was taking my kids skiing in Tahoe, and I stayed in the car. They went and got the skis. The owner comes out and he goes, hey, Carol, I wanted to apologize to you. He said, you have made me a rich man. And he said, I have no debt. All my kids are settled for life. It is so weird, you know, when you think about it. And he said, this business that I have with skiing, it's you can't ever leave it. You can let the storage thing go and make money. And it is the beauty of self-storage, isn't it? So I think that's kind of cool that it, and he said, I'm sorry I ever gave you a hard time. But I look at it like, yeah, it's just, we may have had a difference of opinion about dirt. That's what we had. I think we just were arguing about dirt. Nothing more than that.
Well, Carol, you've given me hope, and we kind of shared before we got on camera that my daughter is on a similar path or was to you, and that she is an opera singer and went to school for that. And of course, there is a little bit of concern, like your parents that we have as well, that, well, I'm not so sure that you're going to be able to support yourself with that. So there's hope that my daughter will get into the storage business someday. But you're right. It's been good that you've been able to at least scratch that itch of being on stage and being comfortable to do that, as you do so well at the trade shows and your educational events as well. I don't want to turn this session. I don't want to turn this episode into hey, let's see what women can do in self storage. But at the end of the day, let's face it. At least speaking for myself and my organization. My entire organization is run by women, and we don't call it pushy, Carol. We say that it seems like the women in our organization have a greater sense of urgency, or at least they share my sense of urgency, and they are doing an amazing job. And I quite honestly, we've rolled a few men out of those roles and specifically sought out females to fill those positions. So again, we don't want to turn it into that, but certainly we've seen. There's been a rise, I think, in some very successful and very powerful women in our industry, which were what used to be, you know, the old men's club.
But I guess what I felt so good about is that I was in that group, and I didn't feel like less than, or I never felt any kind of like I am woman, hear me roar, right? I was just like, I'm just gonna show them how good I am, and I look at people like that. And for me, it's I'm not looking at male or female. I'm looking at just the person. Is that person going to be strong enough in this industry to do what it takes to be able to? And even with my kids, my daughter's, she can be strong, but I think there are times where she'll back down some things. I'm like, well, it'll be interesting to see how she fares in the business world. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that, and there's a lot to be said for, you know, I'm stepping into this role now and accepting it, Carol, that I'm still a pup in this industry compared to you. I've only been in storage since 2005, but, you know, having been through a couple of recessions and the pandemic, you know, I think that allows you to see a little further down the road as to what's coming, and you just build upon that, you know, that experiential knowledge, and, you know, just there's certain things you see in the business and or business in general if you've been in one for a particular amount of years. You just know in your knower when something's right or wrong, and you react to that. And certainly you've got another recession under your belt and then some years. You know, tell me how that has served you and what the difference is that you see in how you react and how you approach decisions or approach just maybe business in general now compared to, say, maybe, you know, your first recession or going back 15 years. You know, how has that changed?
Yeah, I'll give you a good example of that, because I had a gentleman that hired me to do a feasibility study in Utah, and it was in Salt Lake City. And so I thought, okay, you know, I'm a driver. So I went from Tucson up there, and it's easy drive, and it was lovely. It's beautiful country. So I get up there, and there are 13 storage spaces, storage properties with a 1 mile radius, and 52 in a 5. Yes. And so he already had a storage property there himself, and it was maybe 60 units, 70 units, something like that. And he wanted to tear that down and then go up, build up, which I wasn't worried about that. But when he came to me, the plans were already done. So I think, wait a minute, you put the cart before the horse, because you should have done the study before you did, you know, you come to me with the plans. So they were already invested in it, and I said no, and they didn't pay me for the rest of that. But you know what? I can't say yes. I would not say yes, because it's my reputation. I think, and would I ever do that to even someone I hated? No, I wouldn't, you know, steer them down a wrong path just because I thought, you know, yes, can they do it? Will it fill up? Maybe, you know, in time it will. It'll take some time. It's just, but this business, this is why I think it's important to have professionals help you and to be able to listen, especially if you're new and you don't have a lot of experience in that, even if you know the market or you think you know the market, still being able to get that wisdom, because I know national, we had 4 locations up in Utah and in the 80s. So it wasn't an easy market. And I'll tell you, it's so cyclical also because of the weather there, because you don't have as much movement during the winter. So, you know, we don't have as many rentals. Well, that's why Florida and, you know, all the warm states are nice, because it's all year long. We have a great, you know, ins and outs in self-storage, but those colder climates, you know, they can kind of shut down for sure. So I guess, yeah, I think the beauty of storage is that you can make something out of in nowhere. I'm going to say I also did a feasibility study. And I looked at it, this place, and I'm like, we're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there were buffalo. My son and I saw buffalo while we were going out there, and there's nothing else. And we went to all of the competitors, and some of the competitors were 40 miles away, so they're not really competitors, right? But I'm just saying the other storage. We went to every storage property there, and the weird thing is just like I can't tell these people that it wouldn't work, because it will. It's on their piece of property. And so then they went ahead and they're moving along very nicely. And they're trying to do it kind of remotely on their own property. And it's all working. But you just, I think, you know, where it is, the how unique it is, all of it can make a lot. And I think for me, probably the thing that changed my view of self-storage was one of my stores in Hawaii. And I don't know if you know of that, my Waikele self-storage. It's out of bomb bunkers. When I did the feasibility study, well, at first my ex-husband went to Hawaii. He's like, he calls me and he's like, I have no idea. You're going to have to fly over because I'm going to mess this up. You better come look at it. So then I fly out and I look at him like, there is not a woman in the world that's going to rent from this, you know, these bomb bunkers. And they were overgrown and they were rusty on the outside. But the guys were leasing them, you know, because it's hard to buy land in Hawaii because you have to be Hawaiian. Supposed to be. Or someone who's in the deal is going to be Hawaiian. So anyway, I thought, well, maybe if we just like take the outside of them and like paint it a navy gray and then name the battleships from Pearl Harbor that went to, you know, so and try to make it unique. And that store now it's amazing. It's like 100,000 square feet. It's buried in the mountain. It was so difficult to rent up. But I had a great manager that was there, Jenny Rodriguez. She just won Manager of the Year from the Mini Storage Messenger, because she's just so amazing. And it, you know, if I think when you're building something like this, if you think you're going to build a Taj Mahal, you still have to have that nugget of that person that's at the property, the people that are at the property is still important. And I still believe this is the people that are answering the phone, the people that are, you know, interacting with your customers. And I know there are things that are, you know, a lot of people would like to go completely remote. I think it's certainly possible in, you know, Poto, Oklahoma, but in, you know, if you have a bigger property, most of the properties that I build, yeah, we wouldn't even, you know, 100,000 square feet of something, or I did 200,000 square feet in the Bay Area. We had 2,000 units. I mean, it was like it was just a mess. You know, it's a lot of people and a lot of people interacting with each other. And it's like, phew, I'll never build that one, build that big again. It was too big, as big as the Lowe's next door. So,
Wow.
I don't know.
Well, Carol, anybody who's been around the industry for a while remembers and watching your project in Hawaii. And to this day, I somewhat hesitate because I'd love to tell that story when we have our self-storage academies to, you know, talk about the different things that you can do in self-storage. And for years, I would show and say, hey, you can even build in an old abandoned bomb bunker in Hawaii. Now, granted, it's in Hawaii, but, you know, kind of tell the story. But then I don't want to give people the false sense of hope that they can't make that happen for the reason you just mentioned. You still have to have a rock star who is dedicated to you and that facility that is leasing and managing that facility that, you know, has that sense of urgency and a sense of ownership, you know, like they owned it themselves there. Otherwise, those remote locations will not work. And you can't underestimate, you know, the person that you put behind there that's managing that asset for you. And, you know, you and several of the other consultants will, you know, continue to, you know, beat that drum over and over to say, listen, we never understand why, and we still see it in the industry, that someone would buy a $1 million, $2 million, $3 million asset and try to get by with the smallest amount of salary possible. And so they'd hire their hairdresser or the server at the restaurant, you know, because they have a nice personality. And it's like, you know, if you had a $3 million stock portfolio or you name the investment, you wouldn't put your hairdresser in charge of it. So why do you think that that's appropriate to do for a self-storage facility? So again, can't underestimate, you know, the importance of putting the right person behind the desk there as well.
That's true. That's
so, Carol,
critical.
You've,
for me. Sure.
Go ahead.
That's critical for me, is getting the right people for the property. Cause not every person works at the, you know, cause their community, it's all different. Right. And I put people in the wrong places and I've had to move them around. Because I've made a mistake. I put, you know, a person that wouldn't, you know, go with the community. So I made that mistake.
Well, Carol, you've been through a number of different economies, if you will, or markets in self-storage. Owned properties in the meantime, consulting with folks. And, you know, there's a lot of things, as we just discussed, that you can see coming maybe before other folks do as well. every recession is different. Every market economy is a little bit different. So kind of like to get your take on the market that we sit in right now at the beginning of 2024, whether it's how you're navigating this market, your approach to it. So how you're approaching this market and investing in it, as well as how you're advising those folks that come to you to help them with their projects that they have upcoming this year.
Yes. Well, I'll just start by talking about skill check, because we evaluate the employee's sales techniques. So we see very quickly what's going on and how things are going out there. And it's interesting because when things are really good, people don't shop as often as they may. I mean, because to me, it's like your daughter, you know, constantly having voice lessons. If you stop voice lessons for a while, your voice tapers off. You've got to keep using it. So I think that's the idea about, you know, evaluating the sales techniques, because that's super important in storage. But we see the rates going down because, you know, we hear what the rates are coming in when we're doing the shopping, and we see the availability going up, and we think, okay, well, you know, this is this recession. But the thing is, that's why I'm so careful about building. And where, you know, when I'm doing feasibility studies, I'm thinking, you know, this market is just way oversaturated. And I've said that in other places, and I've seen someone build and it's still, you know, maybe longer than it maybe should have taken. But I think you need to look at that, each asset and where it's at separately, you know, based on where that it's at, and just try to continually move it forward. and I mean in income, right, is what we hope for sure. But and that's not always easy. I will say there are times that especially if you've had an asset a long time, you'll see some real cyclical stuff happening in rates. And I know people don't want to go down in rates, but there are times when I have had to go down, unfortunately. But the fact is it, you still rented is better than not rented. Rented it less than you might have expected. And I think sometimes we get if you look at like your economic occupancy, because that's a big thing for me. You know, people say, oh, I'm 90%, 99 or 100% occupied. I'm like, yes, but you're bringing in money if you're 63. And that's no joke. I mean, I just saw that the other day. The man said, oh, look, you know, my manager's doing a great job, 100%. I said, no, but did you look over and see how many concessions they're giving away? And, you know, and it wasn't really delinquencies at the store. They weren't, and then we checked how they were selling, and they were just giving the price, basically. So I think, you know, you have to run these assets and not just think if you build it, it's just going to, you know, be cash flowing all the time for you and be great. Because I'm not saying there's not going to be good cash flow, but I'm saying that it's not that you couldn't do better. And you couldn't make the property better and more profitable.
Mm-hmm. That was always music to my ears when I'm walking a facility with the owner, one that I am looking to buy. And they say, you know, by putting their shoulders back and puffing their chest up that look how good of a job we're doing because we are 100% full. And that's always music to my ears, because all that means is that they're probably the lowest price in the market and they're giving things away. And sure enough, you know, they're 20% below the rest of the market in terms of their street rates. And yeah, their manager is friends with everybody and they've given them free rent and or a reduced rent. And that means nothing but upside. And so those are the ones, the facilities that I hope Carol Nixon does not get a hold of and have Skill Check go visit before I do. Otherwise, I'm going to be paying more. But we see it out there all the time. And that is, you know, that's part of the race that we're in right now, too, is, you know, we are seeing the great roll up in our industry. And we are, you know, I would consider, and I presented on this at the Inside Self Storage Show 2 years ago, that, you know, we are the last great Western frontier, if you will, in commercial real estate, where the other asset classes, you know, they are predominantly owned, you know, 80% are owned by the REITs or the national players. And self storage is just the opposite. We're sitting at about 20%. You know, and somewhere about 35 to, you know, maybe approaching 40 in terms of REITs and national players. But that's still a lot of upside for folks to be able to go out to buy these smaller assets. They're not all mom and pops, but underperforming maybe, or smaller markets. And and then aggregating them and rolling them together and then selling them off to the larger regional, national player or REIT. So tell me, you know, maybe give me a sense of your thoughts on the acceleration of that and timing, or what you're seeing with regards to, you know, that whole movement from your lens.
Yes, I'm a bit worried. But you know, certain markets are hotter than others, you know, and I feel like where we're at now, I just want to be careful. Everything that I'm looking at to build, or to, if you were purchasing something, I'm very careful. But I will say this, for me, I like to go find things that are undermanaged and underperforming, which lots of people would want to do, right? if you're buying something that's already existing. I kind of would prefer to build my own, but if in lieu of that, because it takes a long time to do, I think that it's easy to buy something and manage it better than someone else's. But you have to know how to read the reports correctly. You have to, you know, realize what else is in this market, who else is in this market. The players that are there, I know that if I have a store quest in the market, they're going to be, you know, keep the high prices. They're not going to, you know, say, we better, you know, shut down and go, you know, cheap or something. So I think that all of those things are factors when you're looking and trying to find that right property. And it's getting harder, isn't it? Scott, I mean,
it is, and there is no more low-hanging fruit. And as we've known, and as we teach our folks on our education side of the business, that deals are made; they're not just found. You know, that's gone, and you have to understand the underwriting, and you have to understand the market. You know, it's one thing to understand, you know, and determine whether you have a good, call it a deal on a property, but then, you know, where are you going to take it in terms of your exit strategy and the valuation? That depends upon the markets. You know, yes, you have to do the heavy lifting, but it really depends upon the market. So is that, you know, I want to pull that thread a little bit more. You said twice, you need to be careful. You just need to be cautious when I discussed that strategy in the beginning. Is there anything else to that, or what are some of those other things that people need to be wary of?
Yes, obviously, if you're looking at all the competitors and the rates, those are the main things to look for. But I also look for other parcels, other something that could be developed that could be really hurtful. I just looked up some in Phoenix. I was looking at Phoenix has got a lot of storage. And this
yes,
guy
it does.
Wanted to
We're out in that market. We've been investing there, and it's difficult to grow. We've got one facility, and we haven't been able to find a second.
Yeah, right. And it's hard. And I know this one person said, hey, this owner, it's got this parking lot, and he wants to turn it into this. And I'm thinking, wow, the competitors are really close here. And the deal was weird, too. So I said no to it, partly because it was a participate in the equity and stuff. It was just something was off with it, so I passed on it. But Phoenix, you know, you have to go outside of some of these places and look where the growth is going. I mean, this is some obvious things, but I am still looking in the Phoenix area, and because Phoenix is now getting so populated, other people are going further away. So they're thinking, okay, we're going to Flagstaff, or we're going, they're just trying to move away from all the other people that have come into Phoenix. So, and I think if you see that growing, those smaller outside towns where you can get a better deal on some land, right? Conceivably, you can do that. And I think, it certainly also falls over into, especially here in Arizona, we just have a lot of older people that have RVs. And that they take out every once in a while, don't always take them out. They probably spend less time in it for sure than they ever have, make it worthwhile. But it's still a good industry to be in, right? Whether you're doing, and I will say during COVID, I was working with the call center at SoarQuest and helping them, build it up with the number of agents training them. And they had a storage property there that had one of the largest covered spaces that they had. Now it's not covered all the way, just the top, right? This is a Ramada part. $3,000 a month during COVID. And but the guy is like, he was calling from LA, and he was going out to the outskirts to put it because he said, I can't find another storage place anyway to put this. And he bought it. He already had it, and he couldn't find a place to put it. He said, you know, I couldn't put it at home. I'm like, honestly, people would go buy something like that and not figure out, you know, I might not be able to, because of the homeowners association, be able to park this in my you know, or in the front.
Well, you've seen the rise in obviously construction of boat and RV storage facilities, and that's because of COVID, and it hasn't waned at all. And to that point, we were just in Phoenix. Our facility is in Mesa. And so, yes, we did go outside of Phoenix, and then we were with our extended family taking a drive out to a park about, I don't know, a half an hour east of there, out 60, and saw, you're probably aware of it, one of the largest facilities I've ever seen. It has orange doors, and it had a lot of covered RV parking, probably one of the bigger lots I've seen. It's not open yet. It's maybe weeks or maybe 30 days from opening. And I was shocked and amazed, but yet not shocked or amazed, because first of all, I mean, obviously the sun beats the heck out of anything out there in Phoenix, so it has to be covered. After also passing several other new facilities with lots of boat and RV parking, there doesn't seem to be a shortage of investments in boat and RV storage. So are you seeing that outside of Phoenix? Is it that part of the country in the Smile States where people are going to the Sunshine, where it's not only more populated with that as well as the additional? But tell us a little bit about what you're seeing out there.
Yeah, definitely these smaller markets. Well, in you know, places that you would not, where you'd want to go to live, that's going to be cheaper, right? If I guess is the way to put that. These smaller towns, but they're not ready for really the influx, I'll tell you. That's the hard part. And even with the storage properties that are currently in some of these smaller markets, they're completely full. Sometimes it's just as hard developing somewhere that's not as sophisticated in their development. Department. It takes forever. If you didn't know the right person, it slows you down. There's some things like that. I don't know if you've ever run into that, but it's can be frustrating when you're developing, trying to get something. But I do think that there are markets that you can still find and develop not only regular storage, but, you know, the RV side too. Yes. And I, but am I going to tell you what those are? I'm working on a couple right now.
So you don't have to, but I will ask this question, and you're right. It's some of those markets we found a little bit on both ends of the spectrum, to your point, Carol, that some of them, you have to educate them. We've had to educate them on self-storage and, you know, that it is a quiet neighbor before they just say no immediately. And on the other end, there's some of these small towns that haven't seen any new development or very little that we're rubber stamped before I even get a site plan out to share it with them. They're just happy to have anybody coming in that is going to put more tax dollars on their payroll, if you will. So we've seen that the larger players, the national players and the REITs, they continue to come down. You know, they've been operating in the secondary markets for a number of years, but now down in the tertiary, and I would even say some rural areas that I would never expect to see them. And so I know you can't divulge plans or what have you, but Carol, some of the REITs, we've seen them competing in and coming into these markets that I never would have expected them. Are you working with them and do they share with you maybe some parameters to say, hey, Carol, go out and find me, you know, a site in this town, but it has to have a certain population or the rental rates have to be here or, you know, or two or three of those boxes. Are you privy to some of that information to have an idea where some of these folks are going without divulging any trade secrets?
I do have several clients like that that send me out to look, and they give me parameters, which I don't think should be telling exactly, because it's there. They tell me so. But the interesting thing about it is, I knew, you know, when they're giving it to me and I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, but they know that this. Phoenix, let's just use Phoenix as we've been talking about. Phoenix is got a lot of storage. And so, but what, where are the homes going? You know, that's a lot of what they're looking at is where are the homes going, or where are the places that people are going to have fun? Water, you know, Vegas, whatever, you know, that route anywhere from Phoenix up to Vegas, pretty popular. A lot of people moving up in that area just because, you know, of how expensive it is in Phoenix to now get a home or find a place, right? Find a place. So I think that movement, when you see where people are building, that's what I look for. I look, you know, what's being built? And I'm trying to find everything, all the information I can about what's being built, whether it's not just houses, but, you know, is it McDonald's? You know, who else is going in there that town is now on the radar for
development?
So
no new magic wand is what you're saying. It's always been,
not really.
You follow the pipelines and you follow the growth and you want to be in the path of progress and try to get that site before somebody else does. I mean, that really hasn't changed.
Yeah. And I don't know that it's, I mean, even I years ago, I did a seminar in New Zealand. And this one guy shouts, because I was talking about, you know, driving revenue. And I said, you can always, you know, if you're having trouble, you know, do some specials. And a guy yells from the crowd, you know, he's like, you Americans always, you know, go to specials and stuff like that. And I stopped and I said, sir, how many competitors do you have within a, you know, 5-mile radius? None. None. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, yes. And I have 23 in the 5-mile radius in the store I'm talking about, which is not that terrible, right? Well, it's not bad. It's not good. But, you know, I don't know. You know, I think they're not even talking about the same kind of product we are. The way that Americans, we save our crap, right? We don't throw it away. We get storage and we move a lot. And they, you know... But I do think, you know, obviously storage in other countries is doing well, but I still think we are so good at it. And when you look at, have you looked at some of the stuff that they've done in Japan? When they say, oh, I have this one guy, he's like, oh, we've got 1,000 units. And it's, you know, but it's like 5,000 square feet. I'm like, what? 1,000 units, 5,000 square feet? What are we talking about?
They are truly lockers. They're boxes.
Literally,
yep,
lockers, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We store a lot of stuff. We don't want to get rid of stuff. Mm-hmm. I keep telling my kids, I'm like, no more. Mm-hmm. We have to get rid of something to get something else in. And when we moved, we moved to a little smaller place. And my daughter's like, let's put the piano in storage. I'm like, oh no, we'll never get it out. Never get it out. Nope.
All right, Carol. I keep pressing for secrets here, and so here's another one. Feel free to say no. But I you know, we've been a part of, we, you know, bought and sold, you know, with private equity investors over 28,000 units. We don't own all those now. 5 million square feet almost, and we still have a lot of that under management. I don't know if I'm proud to say or however you want to look at it. We don't own one. I don't have one. I don't rent. I don't own one self storage unit. And we said the same thing to our kids as well. I said, will we ever get to that place? No, we're somewhat minimalist and we're going to be good stewards of what we have. And so I have to ask, how many do you have or how many have you had in your own ownership or rental?
Okay. I have none now, which is exciting. But when I was in California living there, I had a 10x10 at one of my stores that I managed. And it had all my Christmas stuff in it. So I thought that was pretty good, but none of that. Yeah. So it wasn't, but I think it's not logical to leave stuff in there but not that everyone is like that, but it's not logical. I want to tell you this funny story, Scott, because this lady that did my hair in California, she said, every time you sit in front of me, it reminds me I have my storage space. And she said, once a year, my sisters, she had four sisters, they all meet at the storage place. They're going to clean it out and get, you know, but they all bring wine. It was in Lodi, California, lots of wine country. And so they brought their wine with them and they'd take a bunch of stuff out and they'd, okay, here's Goodwill. And it goes in somebody's truck and they're going to take it off. And she said, but we never close it out. And then with my kids, they'll come in and they'll take one dresser out, but they'll put something in. She said, we've kept it over 10 years. And she said, and now it's just part of, we just have given up the idea that we're just going to get rid of that expense because it's now our shuffle place that we put stuff in. And I think Americans sometimes we like that. We like to have something. I know my cousins have storage, and I'm thinking, I'm like, they're never going to get it out. I told them when they put it in, you're never going to get that out. They're going, oh, yeah, we will. We'll get this cleaned up. And no, they still haven't. It's been 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak for your hairdresser, but if I had to guess, they're not going to get rid of it because it's an excuse for them to get out of the house and go drink wine and get together. You know, yes. It's just one more reason for them to do that.
Yes, but I think that she said it's fun now for us, and now it's a place we go to, and we know. And she goes, we know the managers, and see, this is another thing for me is I know remote is really popular, but she goes, we sit in there and talk with the manager. Sometimes the manager will come down and get a little glass of wine with us. I'm like, and she said those people have been there as long as we've been there. That's why to me. I don't mind remote stuff, but if you have a bigger property, having a great person there that likes people, that's the ticket, is finding that person that people like to talk to and that they, you know, and the manager likes to talk, and I want them to do. I mean, that's part of if they think I just want them to, you know, take the payments or whatever, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that person that they're going to really like and want to be around. And to me, that's how I've made a difference at the stores that I've managed, because I really still believe in people. But again, I have built big properties, you know. I don't think, you know, I've done anything under 60,000 square feet in any, yeah. Yeah, but I was looking at something. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I was looking at a property recently in Poto, Oklahoma that had like 16 units. And I thought, I might find that. But that's kind of, that would be, and I thought, but no manager, you know, I'd have to find somebody to, if it was closer, I might not, I might do it. But I had to say no to it.
Well, we've seen, and you just mentioned that, you know, many folks use this just because they whatever, the size of their house just isn't enough, and they transition things in and out. And what I've also seen, which I'll tack on to what you said, which is, you know, people have now, it's just become a part of what they do. And I've even seen it maybe a step further where it seems to be maybe not something that people brag about necessarily, but they just talk about their unit. You know, I got a unit. And it's almost like a, you know, their handbag, or, you know, they talk about it as if it's, you know, just something else that they have. And maybe it is something to give them a little additional social status cred, if you will. And they talk about that, whether they use it to, you know, no matter what way they use it. It almost seems to be, you know, a thing that, I got a unit. Do you have a unit? And that's, you know, good or bad, you know, for the hyper consumers of as Americans that we are. It seems to almost be now becoming a part of people's, you know, I guess, lexicon.
Yeah. And I think once it's just the fact of getting the stuff in there and getting it out's a hassle. And that's just no fun for anybody. But that's the beauty of it. Yeah.
Well, Carol, as we wind up our time, it's been so good to be able to down and finally have a little more time to be able to catch up with each other. But I wanted to give Storage Nation, first of all, before we wrap up, an opportunity to reach out to you. Talk a little bit, if you will, about the services that you offer and then the best ways to get in contact with you.
Yeah. Well, my company's called SkillCheck because when I started, we just started evaluating people's sales techniques. So we do the mystery shopping, and we do it on the phone or in person. But along with that, under SkillCheck, I develop and manage and do anything in self-storage pretty much. But I feel like doing. Or I pass it to someone else if I'm, I just had a hip replacement. So I was like down for a while. So that was, but now my hip's back going good again. So I'm back to speaking too. Boy, some of those Vegas things where we work long, you know, we have to walk a long ways. One day I was like, I walked like 13 miles in Vegas. I was like 13 miles. My hip was killing me by that time. But you know, it's so, what's such a wonderful industry and the people that you know and get to meet. And it's, I'm thrilled to have, you know, been in this and just enjoy meeting people and helping them to make money in it too. So
And I do as well. It's an industry that has been very good to myself and my family for so many reasons that we've talked about and many more. And it just becomes a part of you. So, Carol, how should people get in contact with you? What's the best way for them to be able to find you?
It's www.skillcheck1lnskill.com. You can find us on the internet, easy. It's probably the easiest just to go through the internet.
Right. Perfect. Well, we have been the benefactor of many skill checkout reports that has helped us to make some very good decisions when it comes out to management. I don't know how many reports that we bought over the years, but they have been every single time has been very beneficial. It's been eye opening to something that we just didn't because it's a mystery shop and it is anonymous and nobody knows that we never would have seen because it just uncovers those blind spots. It's just been helpful. So, folks. Storage Nation, you need to go out there and utilize that if you haven't checked in on your managers recently to see what you may be missing out on. So, Carol, before we wrap up, what is maybe if we may have to go back or go through the course of many years, what is one of the best pieces of advice or wisdom shared with you that you would like to share with Storage Nation today?
Well, I think I always... And I think my dad was like this. He always tried to do the right thing. And by your customers and people you deal with and just pass that on in your organization, you know, and it's not always easy because the right thing is people, you know, have a different views of what the right thing might be. But I mean, even I've had to let some people go. And I will say, sometimes they've called back and said, hey, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'm glad that you explained it the way you did. But I want to be upbeat and positive and love what I do. And I want the people that work around me to have that same feeling, you know, enjoy what you're doing. And people that have, like, I just had a lady pass away like last year. She worked for me for 36 years, something like that. And I'm thinking, it's weird without her. It's, you know, when you lose someone, it's like, wow. And we've done it for so long and so many people. But I love the people in this industry. It just seems like it's amazing to me. And you're included.
Well, thanks, awesome. Carol. I appreciate that. And, you know, it was reflected back to us recently. We never want to toot our own horn. So I will say this in reference to you, Carol, and that is your superpower and those of us that have been around for a little while, even though we don't promote it, is your integrity. And that comes, it pays back in spades. And although we never promote that, I wouldn't do it openly. I can do that with you because that is the reason why you're so successful and your state power. And it just goes to show that if you do things right and you do right by people, first of all, in today's world of social media transparency, you're not going to be around long if you don't do a good job for folks, or if you're not above board, or if you're just, if you're not truthful. And so that just speaks to you in volumes for what you've done and what you meant to the industry over the years. And I can't wait to catch up with you this April, hopefully in Vegas.
I'd love to do speaking with you too. That'd be fun.
Well, let's make that happen. We'll make sure that Doug and Bethany get that on the books. And we'd love to have you out. All right. So with that, Carol, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And looking forward to seeing you all again very soon. Storage Nation, you have been spending probably some of the best time you could ever spend in storage with Carol Mixon. And we are so thankful for that. So so we will see you on the next one. And thanks again, Carol.
Hey, gang. Wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the South Storage Podcast and turn on your notification so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.